Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Call yourself a f***ing podcast. Can there be no positivity in this world when all you talk about is f***ing manager has gone again? F***ing Adrian Clark, f***ing Joe Crilly, talking Jackson Pollocks for 45 minutes. We're not the top 20, and have you seen our budget? Have you seen where we f***ing should be? Now, wasn't that jolly? This is the Totally Football League show, and today we are Southend and Forest free. You're welcome. It's me, Caroline Barker, here to speak with the clarity and wide-ranging vocabulary the EFL provides. Feel free, though, to applaud every point as if we're on some head-to-head managerial debate. With me to make it bearable for you, not me, it's Adrian the Breakdown Clark is with us. For those unaware of your Arsenal work, you break down everything, not cars. You don't fix those, possibly. Arsenal women at the weekend.
Yeah, the way Arsenal are playing at the moment, they make me break down watching them back again. But yeah, no, I broke down the game, the women's game at the weekend. Great intro, by the way. I'll try not to swear.
Will you break down Michael Jolly's rant a little bit later?
I can try.
Yeah, that will underline and maybe some exclamations to follow. Making his season debut, because we liked him so much last season, it's former Wimbledon, Southampton, Pompey, Ireland striker David Connolly. You're not used to swearing, are you? I think maybe it was quite a calm dressing room you used to sit in and none of the above used to happen.
No, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. If I was that good, how come it's taken so long to have me back?
Well, we were just waiting for the right conditions, really.
How come it's taken so effing long to get me back?
Hey! You, very much like Jose Mourinho, who we shouldn't mention because he's not yet in the EFL, don't normally come mid-season. But we've brought you in mid-season to change things up. Yep. Really, a new adventure and a new beginning starts here.
Okay, good. Let's get cracking.
Yeah, all right. We've got one more introduction. From William Hill, Joe Bolton are going to win the league. Crilly.
Good morning.
He's come in his Bolton... I didn't even know these existed. His Bolton Wanderers hoodie. Mm. Did you have that made up yourself, or are these on sale at most fashion outlets?
Every Christmas, I get a naff bit of club merch. My dad refuses to buy any of the football shirts, but instead, as an alternative, he'll either get me like a training top or a hoodie with the badge on or a hat with the badge on.
Or a Bolton gnome. No.
No, I've not got the Bolton gnome yet. I need a garden first.
Disappointing. What's the T-shirt as well we should describe, maybe?
Oh. Lionel Richie dressed as a policeman. It says, hello, hello, hello.
That's kind of the level we expect on the Totally Football League show. You can be part of it too with all your merchandise. Actually, I don't think we're close. Are we close enough to Christmas, Abbey, to talk about Christmas merchandise in football clubs? Oh, we are. There's a good... I don't know why clubs sell their own toilet roll. Why would you do that?
No interest in that.
Good. Now, we had a little chat before...
It is very festive in here.
Thank you. With the lights. We do have festive lights too. And we will have toilet roll to chuck at you before the end. We had a little chat about playing with ex-pros before we got... We won't tell you why we were talking about playing with ex-pros. But Adrian, David, do you go and play charity matches with media people?
I used to before my bad back sort of kicked in. I basically just get injured every time. I did play with Joe at Stamford Bridge towards the end of last season. I was truly terrible, like as was our team. Very, very rusty. I've completely lost it.
David?
No.
This was just an invite because I could do with a few managers playing in the National South at the moment. managers? Players? Some of those as well. Maybe a manager. The least said about that, the better. No fixtures at the weekend in the Championship, but that doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about there.
You're listening to the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill.
Your headlines. In an unshocking turn of events, Neil Harris was appointed manager of Cardiff City. Sheffield Wednesday have been charged with misconduct by the EFL. This is in relation to the sale of their stadium. They're going to vigorously defend themselves, they say. And there's a chance that Barnsley will have a manager as we speak and as they speak. The man named Gerhard Struber, who was last seen in Austria with Wolfsberger, could apparently, or has, gone to the top of those betting markets. We'll ask Joe about that in just a moment. But let's start with Cardiff. This applies to any league and the aforementioned Jose, David. It's so difficult to appoint a manager, but Neil Harris saying I'm not the new Neil Warnock, right move for Cardiff?
I think it's a big move, certainly for Neil, because Cardiff's a big club. Not massive, as I did term them, and I got slaughtered for it.
Really?
But yes, I mean, they are.
All right, what constitutes massive?
Well, exactly. I guess you've probably got to be operating in the top six of the Premier League. I don't know, top six of the Premier League. But certainly Cardiff is a really big club.
But in the confines of the Championship, they're a really big club,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say they're massive.
Yeah. But they are, honestly, this is not Neil Harris chat. But I saw you getting pelters for that. I do think Cardiff are a big club, resource-wise,
yeah.
Stadium-wise, fan base-wise.
Absolutely. So I think, look, certainly for Neil, it's a big jump. A lot more expectation. I thought he did really well at Millwall. You've got to remember he had, for them, a lot of success. Maybe, I don't know, every manager, as we've seen with Poch, has their sort of shelf life there. I don't know if he could really change things. I know that he really struggled up top, struggled to get goals. He lost his front men. Bradshaw was always injured. So I had a degree of sympathy for him. And I know Neil because I worked at Millwall as the under-18s coach. And but it's a big job. Cardiff is a different set of expectations to Millwall. And it's a big one.
Has he got what it takes, having worked with him? Will he be looking to resource from lower down within the club, younger players in there? What will he try and mould that club into?
Well, I think certainly at Millwall, he did well with what he had, which was not a lot of money. I mean, you've got to remember, under Neil, Millwall ended up selling players for sort of fees that they just couldn't even have dreamt about in bygone era. Maybe that's because money's obviously gone up, but the likes of George Saville going for sort of 7-8 million quid, I mean, that's unheard of. And apart from Bradshaw, there's no one really of any note. And he signed Saville for about 300,000. So he'd done really well with what he had and brought a lot of money in. But I think with Cardiff, he's got a mould, a squad, and so many signings that Neil Warnock brought in there. And again, lack of goal scorer, really lack goals. It's going to be a big job for him.
Yeah, I think he's capable. He needs a striker, that much is clear. January can't come soon enough, I'd imagine. For him, it'll be interesting to see who he goes for up top. He's big on character, isn't he? He likes to look at people and he wants proper men in the dressing room. He's about unity. And I think there are some good characters within the Cardiff group. So I don't think he'll be unhappy with what he's got to work with.
So you don't think he'll struggle to... It's the accusation that was levelled at Nathan Jones at Stoke, wasn't it? He won't struggle with that.
I don't see a load of egos in the Cardiff dressing room. I don't think Neil Warnock would have tolerated it for a start. He'd have knocked them into shape, I'm sure. So in that respect, it's a suitable job for him. I don't understand why Cardiff fans aren't pleased with this move. There's a feeling that they're underwhelmed. But give the guy a chance. I think he's capable of getting them towards the playoffs this season. And look, the 7 points off it. Plenty of time for Neil Harris.
Interesting that Charlton first up for Harris, when there was some talk and speculation, at least in the papers and on social media, about whether Bowie would be a good fit with what they were doing at Cardiff. So how he handles that, a team that fluctuated through the season, Charlton as well.
Charlton, yeah, they're up and down, aren't they? But look, Lee Bowie's stock is pretty high at the moment. He's going to be linked with jobs when they come up. But right now, you have to say that in 11th place in the Championship, Charlton are probably punching slightly above their average. So, watch this space. I'm not quite convinced Charlton have what it takes to reach the playoffs. And beyond that, you know, what will Bowyer do? Will he stick around or will he be tempted by a move to a so-called bigger club?
I do want to have a little chat about how you go about appointing a manager, because I do think any league you're in, and for the manager as well, choosing where you go next is odd. But just for a quick mention for Joe, I know you love I'm a Celebrity. Did you think at the time that Neil Warnock was going into the jungle and that's why it happened?
I would have liked him to have gone into the jungle, yeah.
Could still happen, right?
They could fly him in, yeah.
Yeah, nice little aside. I very much enjoyed that. That as a manager picking where you go next, and as a club picking a manager, it's an impossible formulation, right? And he said that he wants to be top six, and this is where the club will be. Again, you've got to have clarity from the owners saying, right, this is what we expect from you from the off, and the manager saying, all right, I'm accepting that, and this is actually what I'm working in and what I'm restricted to.
You'd like to think that happens. It doesn't always.
I don't feel very clear in that.
Well, we'll probably get to Leighton Orient later on in the show. And what happened there with Carl Fletcher, 29-day tenure, it begs the question, what did they talk about in the interview? Were the relevant people present in the interview? I always think if you're taking your own staff as well, I think they should be part of that process, shouldn't they, as well, a little bit somewhere down the line, so they can meet the people and just be familiar with what the club are looking for. And if you're not bringing your own staff, then you should absolutely have the existing staff, in my opinion, in that recruitment process for a new manager, but so that you're all absolutely on the same page ahead of the game. Looking at what happened at Leighton Orient, I don't think that happened.
Danny Cowley always says he goes and interviews everyone from, you know, whoever's selling the programmes to whoever it might be to get a sense of the whole club first.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny on that because I was at Wembley last week for the England game and we had Chris Fagan, who's the Brisbane Lions head coach, give a talk, a presentation, and it was fascinating. It was just that. He spent the first 3 weeks, it's Aussie rules, right? So it's 18 aside. So they've got near enough 50 players. He brought them all round for dinner. Not at one time, because obviously
who's cooking?
Yeah, doesn't quite have a banquet table, but about 10 at a time, and then made them dinner, spoke to all the players, and then when they all left, him and his wife sort of just went, right, what do you think about him? What do you think about him? And it said it took him basically, you know, a good month to get through everyone. Then it took him about 3 years, and he's coach of the year last year.
Yeah,
so it's quite fascinating. Different ways about trying to learn about a group very quickly.
As a player, would you expect to have, if you were a senior player at a club, would you expect to have the moves boosh? Would you expect to have some sort of influence or say in a new manager that comes in?
No. Absolutely not.
Do you think there are some clubs where that's happening?
Yes. The problem, I've been at a club and we would be on a bus going back from a game and the chairman would call one of the players. Yeah. And that actually happened, and that's just totally unacceptable.
Well, just to say, what do you think about X, Y, and Z?
And I remember at one club, I was asked by the chief exec at the time, you know, what about after a game? Is it all right if we have it? I was like, no, that's not for me. But some players will do that, but some players, I don't think that's right. So in terms of how you select, I mean, I remember talking to Mark Warburton. I was on a course with Mark, and he said at Brentford, it didn't really matter where he was in the league, because the owner, Matthew Benham, and the stats, the company behind the football club, is all stats-based. So if he was sixth and the stats were showing that actually they should be 12th, it didn't really matter that they were sixth, because the stats would just say, well, you're going to regress to where you should be eventually. And, you know, I guess every club has their template, their model. For Brentford, it didn't necessarily matter where you might be in the league. It was where your stats were telling you. You might be overachieving, but actually you're going to come back down. And that's. But I think if you know what you've been judged against, it's fine as a manager. When you kind of don't know and the goalpost shifts based on performance or where you are now, then it's very difficult.
Yeah, clarity. Yeah,
you can't have players interacting with the board. I'm really dead against that, because there's self-interest there. There has to be. And if I was a manager, you know, that wouldn't be allowed to happen. I would walk away from that situation. It wouldn't, because it's going to end in tears.
You are listening to the Totally Football League Show. Adrian Clark, David Connolly, and Joe Crilly here. Joe, we will get to the subject of Bolton in just a wee while. Not in this league yet. One day soon, that will happen. Quick word on Sheffield Wednesday, a meeting the High Court then over the sale of Hillsborough. Little bit of the context of the situation. There's lots of numbers and lots of stats around it. So we might have some klaxons or some bells and whistles from producer Abby about now. I'll pause. That was one. I don't know what you might have inserted then that might make me look a fool, but don't worry, it's not that hard to make me look a fool. So there are strict financial fair play rules, right, in the EFL. A club can't lose more than £39 million over 3 years. Sheffield Wednesday were on the brink of falling foul of this until they sold Hillsborough to their owner for £60 million. The EFL investigating the how and when of that all happened in the inclusion of the 2018 accounts when it was sold a year later. Wednesday say for their part they'll vigorously defend the charges, and it's kind of three problems going here. The timing, for one, the fact it's going to take 8 years for the payment to come through, and finally, perhaps the most interesting, the fact that the stadium cost £60 million, which maybe given that Reading sold theirs for £27 million, might be seen as being a bit high. However, different parts of the countries, the value on the land, where the stadium is, etc., etc., etc. I'm sure they'll use as mitigating circumstances. Football finance expert Kevin Maguire, he was on the BBC saying that the Owls will have to simply provide evidence that the transaction was undertaken at arm's length, at market prices, with a report by a surveyor and also evidence the transaction has gone through. All things that happen when you buy and sell a house, right? So should have the evidence of that. Sheffield Wednesday then, we don't know what's going to happen. Could be points deduction. But does Adrian bring up this whole issue over two things, financial fair play, one thing, but also the ground as an asset, where you stick it, what covenants it has put on it, how you remove it from the, not the football club, but the business of the football club and make it part of the community. And that's the only way around all this, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. I don't think it sits comfortably with a lot of football supporters. UEFA, incidentally, wouldn't include stadium sales in FFP figures.
I think that's the right thing to
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Premier League and the EFL have come in line together. But of course, in the Premier League, it's not an issue. They're so flush with cash. No one's going to need to sell their own stadium. It feels wrong to me. It's definitely a loophole that clubs are trying to circumvent. Obviously, Derby have been accused, haven't they, of doing the same thing. My personal view on it is that you know, providing it doesn't add up. And how can it add up when payments are taken 8 years, by the way? Yet the whole figure is included in last year's books just to get away with the not falling into so much debt. So yeah, it is potentially a form of cheating, in my opinion. And just like Birmingham, I hope actually, as a football fan that wants level playing fields, I hope they have to take their medicine on this one.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because the EFL approved Derby's stadium sale, didn't it? And I guess if Sheffield Wednesday are going to be now found guilty, well, how have they enabled Derby's to be signed off? And I think that's what Steve Gibbons at Middlesbrough is rightly complaining about. Mm. There's no way that they should be able to obviously sell it at one point and then put it into their accounts at a different point just to obviously avoid possible financial fair play.
For me, that's the other interesting point about this is the fact that it's other owners within the leagues too. And the league, as the EFL said, over Berry and all that's happened, the league is made up of the clubs. So it's the noise that comes within the clubs too and how that will reflect on it. Either
and
way.
Steve Gibson. Yeah. Steve Gibson, surely he's up there as a pillar of, you know.
Seen as a powerful member of that.
Absolutely.
Well, there's even been talk that individual clubs may pursue legal action themselves, which is another, you know, can of worms that could be about to be open. So this is quite a really important, isn't it, moment, I think, in the EFL. What do they do?
And absolutely. And if you can take a model of elsewhere where it's not part of the equation, then why wouldn't you do that? Yeah. Remove that issue.
There's a wider issue in terms of the EFL also allowing clubs to lose a lot of money and it's still being okay. I think that needs to be looked at as well.
Yeah, tougher financial regulations across the whole piece. Sheffield Wednesday, just to remind you, say they're going to vigorously defend their case. The fixtures then. Fulham, Queen's Park Rangers on Friday night. You, me and the cold, David. It's going to be freezing. We were looking at the Riverside Stand, which is gone. The wind's going to come off that Thames and we're going to freeze, which is the least of our issues.
It is. I love going to Craven Cottage, so it doesn't matter whether it's blowing a gale. It's a great place to go and watch your football.
Off the tube, that little, particularly when it's dark, so as it will be by the time I get there, off the tube, that little walk down to Craven Cottage.
It's beautiful. Seeing it. Bishop's Park.
Brilliant. Yes. A brilliant, brilliant night under the lights. And Friday nights have turned up a few interesting results in the Championship this season.
Fulham. Interesting interviews as well, actually.
don't let's not even worry about Scotty Parker. That's going to be fun on Friday night. I want Scott Parker to do well at Fulham. I absolutely do.
You know, however,
no. I just do you know what Fulham are this season?
I've seen them a few times, and I haven't totally been impressed at the times that I've seen them, but I did a coaching course with Scott and I'm really hoping that he goes on to do well, but he's finding it hard to get the right formula in terms of what they are. I don't like, for example, that the wingers play on the wrong side. I'd prefer Knockaert to be on his natural left foot. I know he's traditionally done well playing off the opposite side, and Cavalero on his natural side too, because I think it's all a little bit congested. And they've got Mitrovic, who's, I know he's suspended for this game, but he's got the outstanding striker. I mean, their squad is just phenomenal for the Championship. They should be walking it, and I guess that's probably the problem. A lot of possession, not that much cutting edge.
But the players, and Eric, were you saying that you've worked with him when he's been coaching and the like too, the players seem to enjoy his coaching style and working with him as well. So it's just, you kind of wonder whether it's they need that one big result, which would be thumping QPR at home, wouldn't it, on a Friday night?
Yeah, definitely. I'm completely with David on the style of play. They're just running down too many cul-de-sacs. Everything's slowing down inside the final third. I think inverted wingers work great if you've got fullbacks that are really dynamic. And Joe Bryan's more than capable of it down the left in particular. If you've got two fullbacks that are allowed to push on inside the final third and deliver a stream of crosses, then it can work just fine. But we haven't seen enough of that from Fulham, who haven't beaten anyone in the top 12 this season, which I think is quite a telling stat, really, from their end. They've been really strong against teams that have struggled, not beaten anyone of note. So if they were to beat QPR in this derby, it could arguably be their best result of the campaign.
And it would stick them back into those playoff positions as well, which, you know, I know we're still early.
Well, they got thumped as well, didn't they, by Hull, I think, last home game.
Yep.
So they've sat on that for quite a while, haven't they? It'd be interesting to see the reaction.
Yeah, and the problem is, I don't know who else he's going to come in and score goals. I know Bobby Reid, obviously, but he hasn't got one in an awful long time and was the Championship, you know, top marksman a couple of years ago at Bristol. But
that's what I mean. It's a perfect opportunity for him.
Absolutely.
Again, isn't
but
it?
He can't really play that lone role by himself.
No.
That's not really him. So, yeah, it might be back to the drawing board. I don't know what they do, because I doubt he'll change his shape and play forwards.
How would he adapt then to bring Bobby Reid in?
I don't know. As I said, I don't think he'll play two forwards unless he plays him up there by himself in a like-for-like change and just keeps it as it is, his 4-3-3.
It was Mitrovic that punished that error by Camp last time out as well, wasn't it? So you're right, a big miss for him.
And that did come from a fullback putting the ball into the box from a good area, Christie it was. So that maybe is the prototype for the way they need to move on.
He only came on, didn't he?
Yeah.
He came on, he didn't start the game, and they certainly need a little bit more threat from out wide from those fullbacks.
So what of QPR then? Are they a contrast to the squad that Fulham have? You know, done well with the parts that he's got. Has he overachieved?
Well, my view of QPR is that they've got a load of flair, great to watch. You know, Eze Chair, guys like this, Naki Wells and Hugill, I think is a good partnership in the making. My issue with them is at centre-back and in central midfield. I just think they're a bit weak there, and they're lacking, particularly in central midfield, Championship nous. And when I look at this matchup, that I think is where they might end up struggling, QPR in central midfield. They could easily get dominated by Fulham in the game. What they do have is, from those counters and turnovers, players like Eze that can hurt Fulham. So I think it's a really interesting match. Should be a good one.
I think that they're going to have to improve on the Brentford performance, because I was at Loftus Road then and they were no way near what they could be. I mean, Brentford were excellent. Yeah. But they just blew him away.
Yeah.
Just absolutely blew him away. He played a sort of different formation. He played Eze out wide on the right. Didn't suit him. Then he changed them over. He changed his wingers halfway through. They've conceded so many goals. Something like 30 in 16 games. Leisner, just give him the ball and hopefully he'll give it back to you. That would be what Fulham would be saying. So look, I think he's done really well, Mark, with what he's got. He's done really well. But there's no doubt they've had a bit of a drop off.
Yeah, I was at the QPR Middlesbrough 2-2. As well, and I just both sides, I think there'll be loads of goals, and both, I think, will come out with, oh, I don't know, don't make me say, I'm not going to say, you're not even making me, so I don't even know why I'm looking at you. Joe, say something good, and let's talk about one of the other fixtures. So we'll get the odds from Joe in just a minute. Luton Leeds. Go on then, have a guess at that one.
4-0 Leeds. I've been really impressed with Leeds, actually. I think they're playing better this season than they were for last, and they're beginning to find a bit more penetration, aren't they? A bit more incision inside the final third. Loads to like about them, and they've even, I think, mixed up their tactics a bit better. Bielsa's not always gone with a 4-1-4-1. He has used his famous 3-3-3-1, which I really like, because it completely bamboozle opposition managers. But no, there's a lot to like about Leeds, and I'm not impressed by what's really happening at Kenilworth Road under Graham Jones. I think he's starting to panic a little bit with his decision making.
He revamped
his defence, didn't he? He took out Sonny Bradley, put in a player that for his debut has been there for an awful long time, and it didn't work at Reading. Yeah, they just concede too many goals, and I know that they've lost a lot of good players, Luton, but the new Luton aren't a patch on the side that came up, I'm afraid.
Difficult for them.
Of Nathan Jones going back in, which is...
He's there.
Yeah, and obviously he's had such great success there.
Would you put him back in there?
but I can see that obviously if things continue for Graham as they are at this moment in time, it'd be like a natural fit, wouldn't it? He did so well there.
The thing is, he would know that, and Graham is currently in the job, of course. They have to do a complete rebuild, and that's how you have to see Luton now, isn't it? Because of the players that have gone, because of how things have changed.
Well, they used to be such an attacking threat against Reading. They had one shot on target, and I guess, you know, at least you knew in a Nathan Jones team, certainly at Luton, he had it. But you've got to remember, obviously, the fullbacks are gone. It's a little bit changed from, obviously, when he was last there.
They're a very vibrant team in League One, very attack-minded, and I'm not seeing that same level from them. I think, psychologically, picking up so few points has damaged them and damaged their morale. When you're that free-flowing, vibrant attacking side, when results are going against you, that's going to hurt you more because they rely more on confidence than a lot of other teams who focus on organisation. So, yeah, Nathan back to Luton would be fascinating because they kind of had a bit of a chirp at each other, didn't they? Nathan and Gary Sweet, wasn't it? I don't think it was left on the best of terms, but I guess... You know, if they see him as the man to get them out of the mire, maybe it could happen.
They were well compensated, though, weren't they? Yeah. I mean, they got really well paid from Stoke, and they've got tough games coming. They've got Charlton and Brentford next.
Give them some money back, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Something about Luton Leeds tells me, Joe Crilly, that it won't be maybe as convincing a win for Leeds as some might say. Anyway, what say you?
Well, we think it's going to be a convincing win for Leeds. They're 1-2 to get the win. Luton 11-2 in the draw, 100-30.
What about the Fulham QPR on Friday night?
Another relatively one-sided betting outcome. 4-5 for Fulham to win, 17-5 for QPR, and 14-5 for the draw.
Thank you, Joe. Well, the Championship covered to some extent, a longer extent than perhaps some were thinking. Producer Abby, let's look to a place that is starting to become a happy hunting ground for some wanderers.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets, or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with. Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
Into League One, where there were just 5 matches at the weekend, and king of all of those results in the room was Joe Crilly.
Bolton Wanderers 1, MK Dons 0.
That was your chance to take over the position of Charlotte Green and read the football classifieds every week, and you lost it. 93 minutes it took of play.
About 30 seconds left, but here's Luke Murphy around the back. Oh, goal for Bolton! It's Daryl Murphy who missed the penalty, but he surely won it in the game's final seconds.
3 wins on the bounce then to get Wanderers to break into positive numbers. They've now got 1 point. Even. I'm supposed to say I'm starting to believe they might survive. At the other end of the table with a different kind of Wanderer, Gareth Ainsworth's Wickham, top, after 2 goals in 2 minutes. Akinfenwa again doing the business there. Every home team took the W in League One last weekend. Well done them, unless you were an away team, in which case, no. What's happened to Bolton then, Joe? Our regular pit stop to say Keith Hill deserves a medal of some sort?
Yeah, I just think that the team are starting to believe now that they can win. I think it was over the last 2 seasons, Bolton have lost 52 matches over the last 2 seasons. And I think with all the issues that were going on at the club, I think the players and the fans were able to say, well, the reason why the club are doing so badly is because of the issues that are going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Now that that's all sorted, there's new players in who don't, the majority of whom don't have the baggage of the last few seasons of not being paid and getting into that losing mentality. And I just think Keith Hill has just galvanised the team into a position where they go out and they think that they can win every match. Now, we talked last week.
They know
week.
What they're doing. They're organised, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And they fully deserve the win against MK Dons at the weekend as well. It's not like they're just getting over the line. They're winning these matches, and deservedly so. And we spoke last week about potentially some of the players on loan leaving in January. That is an issue. The other issue is that, well, last Friday it was meant to be announced what Bolton's points deduction would be for failure to fulfil a couple of fixtures. So that will probably take the club back into negative points. It hasn't yet been announced. There's talk that it may well be later today, but given how the EFL like to drag their heels over things like this, I'm not holding my breath to find that out. And it could be as little as 3 points. It could be as big as 10, 11, 12, which would be a real kick in the teeth for the team, especially as they've played so well.
But given all of that, if he keeps them up after all of that, then LMA, he's got to be manager of the year, isn't he?
Yeah. It'd be amazing. It'd be extraordinary. Yeah. He's doing a great job. Brand new team. I still think that they need promotion form to survive, don't they? And I think to do that with a team that's just been thrown together, I still think it's pretty almost impossible.
Psychologically, great for them now. Yeah. Positive points,
which is why it would hit them again if they get another
Absolutely.
Points deduction.
Yeah, and they were brilliant against Fleetwood. You know, I think Dal Murphy and O'Grady, them has to be a real heavy front two because Chris O'Grady is, you know, he's muscular, he's a strong boy, and him and Daryl, I'd say, would rough quite a few feathers, certainly. And great to see Daryl. I played with both of them. Chris was at Leicester when I was there. Daryl, obviously, I played with. Great to see them both doing well.
Would they tip it if Akinfenwa was on the other scales?
Oh, that would be, yes.
Yeah. I think they might, you know, there might be some kind of rift somewhere in the world. Some plate might shift as a result of that happening. If that's a positive then, which it is for Bolton, well done, Joe, in a non-condescending way, slightly condescending. All that's happening at Sunderland at the moment, if you went on social media this morning, in between the Jose Poch, Jose Poch, Jose Poch, Jose Poch, every so often you'd see Roker Report talking a little bit about what happened for Sunderland losing to Gillingham after extra time, their replay on Tuesday night. Some of the letters, they have letters to Roker Report. What an abysmal performance. Some of these players don't deserve to wear the shirt. Lowest position ever, out of their depth. And Jack Ross didn't have a plan B and got sacked. Phil Parkinson hasn't got a plan A, writes another. Are Sunderland fans right to worry at the moment? Mm. Phil Parkinson, is he managing under difficult circumstances? And so, in the same way that you've just said about Bolton, Joe, should it be not about Phil Parkinson, but about the club behind it?
No, I think he's got a good enough squad to work with. I think a good enough squad to go up. Fairly consistent on that throughout this season. They're just not playing very well at the moment, particularly going forward. I mean, no shots on target, I don't think, against Gillingham. The previous performance in the cup against them was dire, by all accounts. They've just hit a bit of a wall. When we had Phil on the show here, they'd just beaten Tranmere 5-0. And since then, they've barely had a shot, which is a real surprise. So they desperately need a bit of a reboot in this game. It's got a big feel about it, hasn't it? Sunderland against Coventry. The one thing in their favour is that at the Stadium of Light, unlike when they were in that downward spiral, Sunderland, where they couldn't get a point at home, they're really strong still on home turf. So and they're unbeaten at the Stadium of Light in the league this year. So that's something for them to cling on to. The mood's not good though. He's got a bit of work to do. He's just got to get the juices flowing, hasn't he, Phil Parkinson? Yeah. Inject a bit more energy into the team.
Certainly when they keep losing basically in every away game they turn up to. I mean, the Scunthorpe game, I think everyone felt, certainly the fans, that might have been the lowest point, but I don't know, maybe the Gillingham one is now. Hopefully he has Mark McNulty. I don't know if he's going to be fit. Obviously Will Grigg is struggling for goals badly. Wyke is out. I mean, McNulty up against, I guess, Coventry's former side, where he did brilliantly, but they need some goals desperately. And Coventry are superb. I've seen them quite a few times. I was going to say at home. It kind of is their home, isn't it, St Andrews? But it's a bit odd going there thinking, right, let's put in Satnav.
They've adapted well to going there.
They've adapted really well. And actually, the game I saw from St Andrews was against Tranmere. They actually lost really close to the end, but they were excellent. They just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. But they've gotten playing really good football, very confident. Mm. And there's his way, Mark Robbins, and it's a really good one.
I've got some breaking news to tell you, which won't be breaking by the time that people listen to this. So it's just breaking for you lot in here. Hold it. I'm not going to tell you. Just briefly tell me about Ipswich Blackpool and then I'll tell you the breaking news.
Is that why they call a tease in the business?
Are you teased?
It was just Blackpool.
Yeah.
Good game. Really good
game. That's all you needed to say. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, I do, but go on.
I'm keeping it.
I think it's a really good game. I think we'll learn a lot about Ipswich and how good they are in the next three games. They've got Blackpool, Wickham and Coventry. They haven't played at home for ages. And I think the team itself, the main 11, have not played a game for ages. They've been rested in the cup competition. So they'll be nice and fresh for this one. But Blackpool are a dangerous team in forward areas. So I think this is a game that Ipswich could get beaten, actually, on home turf. They lost their last home game against Rotherham. I think if Simon Grayson's team rock up there, play with the kind of confidence they've had on home turf, they can get a good result.
Well, they beat Peterborough, didn't they? So you never know. And they're in great form. And it sounds like off the pitch. Now, I don't know, maybe like Bolton, Blackpool seem to be going places. Got a new CEO. You know, they've got the wheels in motion there, certainly, that I think they're going places, Blackpool.
Do you want to offer me odds on either of those two games before I bring you the not breaking news, depending on when you're listening to this?
I'll do it quickly because I'm very excited. Accrington are favourites to beat Bolton, even money. Bolton 3-1 and the draw 5-2. Ipswich, Blackpool. Ipswich 21-20. Blackpool 14-5 and the draw 9-4.
Okay, here is your not breaking news. Who am I? Who am I describing? A product of the Red Bull coaching system, a 13-year playing career as a combative midfielder, hung up my boots in 2007, and I will begin my new role immediately.
Stupa.
Yeah! Exciting Austrian coach arrives at Oakwell from Wolfsburger AC. We are delighted, reads the statement on the Barnsley website, to announce the appointment of Gerhard Struber as Barnsley Football Club's new first team coach. Speaking to Barnsley FC, .co.uk. He says, I'm extremely happy and proud that everything's worked out. I'd like to thank, etc., etc., etc. Now's the time for everyone to pull together, the board, the management team, the squad, the wider club staff, and of course, our passionate supporters. I can't wait to start working for this club and town, and especially to meet you all at the game this weekend.
Very positive statement, but obviously, does he know the whole back line is gone from last season? I just wonder how many of these managers
really
know.
Oh, you had to
really
put a dampener on it.
Well, do they really know, say, the history of how they got up from League One, maybe? And
well, you're a mug if you don't go and look at it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Do you think?
I don't know.
Well, I would be watching. I would have made sure that I got the DVDs of the last, you know, 5-6 games just to have a good idea of what I was taking over. A bit of a Yapstam lookalike. That's as much as I know about Gerhard Struber right now, except he's not really a Yapstam lookalike. He's only 5'8". So he's a mini Yap.
Now, how many, if you put him on the scales with... let's not do that one. You're right, though. You've got to have a look at the history, but there's a point, surely, as a manager where you think, I want to go and make it in the English game again, where that tips, and you think, I'll just give it a go. I think I can do it. And if you're confident in yourself, you're going to think you can do anything.
Well, football's football. And if you believe that you're a good coach, then you should be able to transfer those skills wherever you go. It's, yeah, but I think it's a dereliction of duty to yourself if you don't at least look into it.
Anyway, by the time people listen to this was yesterday's news, right? So on to League Two we go. That ends our League One / Championship chat again. Up next, League Two. Listeners, I don't know why I get posh around Harry, but I do. Listeners, it's that time of year when you need to start thinking about what to get Uncle Tim for Christmas. And, well, you just haven't got a clue. Well, rather than getting the usual pair of socks, Adrian, do you have a better idea?
Well, I think that Harry's Razors is a really good shout, and I'll tell you why.
For Auntie Meryl,
because
Uncle Tim.
My dad's called Harry.
Right.
And this is a true story. I've bought him Harry's Razor with a H engraved in it. You can get yourself a personalised Harry's Razor.
Is that actually true?
That is true.
Do I need to fact check it?
No, it's actually true. Right. I can even vouch for them being a great shave too.
Right. Good. What do you get? Well, let me tell you for what you get for a close and comfortable shave. You get a weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, you do, a rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover. Adrian, I'm hearing that listeners to the Totally Football League show, this show, you can get started shaving with Harry today by claiming your trial set for just £3.95. Is that what you did?
No, I didn't. But please do that.
Do and support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, a foaming shave gel and a travel blade cover. Just go to harrys.com/footy. That's harrys.com/FOOTIE. Give Uncle Tim and Adrian a treat. Get him some Harry's.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker.
League Two then on the Totally Football League Show. And this is where it's all happening. No, it is. Just because it goes from bad to worse for Macclesfield, who did play against Mansfield at the weekend, 0-0 there, but people are saying they've got something about them that might not work out well. It's all about paying bills and is it going to happen? Won't it happen? Essentially, all that's happening off the pitch may be distracting from that on it. Jolly's off from Grimsby after an F-off with a journo, which saw the former manager swear 58 times in 4 minutes. I'm reading this because it's perfect. Grim, full stop, Spee. Thank you, Abby. That was perfectly delivered too. After less than a month together, Carl Fletcher and Leighton Orient have called it off. When you know, you know, you know, right? And Stevenage caretaker boss Mark Sampson has been charged with using racist language by the FA. He has until the 6th of December to respond to that. Managerial changes are plenty then. 58 times in 4 minutes. Every 4 seconds, that's a swear. I mean, that goes beyond punctuation, doesn't it, for Mr. Jolly? You got to look after your local journalists, those that you talk
to. That's the first rule, I think, of in the management handbook is get on the right side of your local radio and local newspaper journalists. It's basic. It really is. You don't tear into them, and because they will stitch you up and they will publicise it and they will ultimately it will come back on you. And just a really bad mistake on his part.
What one F you can sometimes get away with, point in case Gareth Bale on live TV.
But the late, great Geordie Armstrong, who I worked with at Arsenal Reserves, not one of the nicest fellas you could ever wish to meet, but in a football dressing room, it would just be, you know, an F word would just flow every two or three words, and you wouldn't take any notice of it. And this one, it was real personal abuse. It was tearing the heads off individuals in a very unpleasant manner. Should a manager lose their job for that? Is one question. Probably take too long to answer, but in some respects, I would feel a touch sorry for him because it's not down to footballing reasons particularly, but yeah, it's a lesson for him.
Well, I think this is really unsavoury because this was before the press conference, right? And it was secretly recorded, and that's a real betrayal of trust because no doubt, yes, you've got to keep the local press on side, but obviously the local press as well, often, you know, you'd divulge things to the local press. Yeah, you'd keep them on side, you'd have stuff off the record, and it's a real...
It's true.
It doesn't sit well with me because if I think back recently, you look at the South Africa rugby coach, Checker, where he was voice recorded, obviously berating his own team. And as bad as it was for Jolly, obviously he didn't realise that was going to be made public, and I have a degree of sympathy for him.
And it was mutual agreement, the chairman pointing out that he wasn't sacked. But from that point forward, what happens with him now? And what happens with Grimsby now?
Well, Anthony Limbrick's going to take over. And Anthony was at Southampton when I was there. He was coaching in the younger age groups and former Woking boss. And he'll be keen to make that his permanent role, no doubt.
Because he did well at Woking when he was there for a period.
Yeah. He's in possession of the shirt, isn't he? They haven't played, by the way, in the league since October the 22nd, Grimsby. So they've had games called off for fun. So, and sometimes that can work against you, can't it, as well? Because
they've got Northampton who...
But it looks... When you look at the league table, you think, oh, Grimsby are struggling. But they've played three games less than most of the teams around them.
Yeah.
So it can be a little bit misleading. The goals had dried up. I think there were issues in terms of form. So I think only scored one goal in the last four. So that's not great. They failed to score in 40% of their games, which I think, given the players he's got available to him in forward areas, that's poor, really. So perhaps they, a little bit like Wimbledon, perhaps the Grimsby board just needed something to hang Michael Jolly with, and they've taken that opportunity.
Mutual, as it says that it was, three games, if they win those, then they're just a point off Northampton, who they play at the weekend. So... It could be made up. So it's how quickly he gets them going. But having been in there and about it as well, what that means for Anthony Limbrick. Carl Fletcher and Leighton Orient, The positive from this, I don't know if you saw this, Joe, was it you that retweeted it? But they showed the board afterwards engaging with the fans, Martin Ling talking, essentially that they got it wrong. I know it's about giving time to a manager, right? And saying what you want from them. 29 days. 29 days.
Can we do shortest reigns as managers? Yeah. Can we have a little quiz on that?
Who was it? Was it Leroy Rossignol?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
How long was it? Hours? Wasn't
hour.
It?
1 hour.
Well, it was in the press conference. It was
10 minutes.
10 minutes
no?
in the press conference.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He's all right though, Leroy.
29 days. He's had a good go.
Yeah, he is.
I feel really sorry for Carl Fletcher because those 29 days may well have killed his managerial career. Where's he going to go now? It doesn't matter that they've said, oh, look, it's nothing to do with it. It's us, not you. It's that kind of breakup chat from the Leighton Orient board.
I'm glad you felt that too. I felt exactly the same thing.
But the board are basically saying, we had a look at him and we thought he was rubbish, so we got rid of him. You wonder whether he'll ever get an EFL manager's job again.
I don't know whether they feel that, look, we made a mistake, we should have kept Ross in charge, and let's make that call now. But, I mean, they have books, don't they? First 100 days in management for football, you need, you know, can they have one for first 10, 15 days, something like that. You just don't get the time. It's ridiculous. But he had a tough job to fulfil, really tough, obviously, after Justin Edinburgh, and then obviously Ross Embleton doing so well. Difficult
when you're coming in. You've got Ross there on the training pitch. You've got Joby McAnuff there on the training pitch.
Martin Ling.
Martin Ling kind of watching. You can imagine it, can't you? It's like you're all looking at the new guy, listening to what he's got to say. And if you don't like it, you're looking at each other, you're raising your eyebrows, thinking,
You didn't feel that.
Not sure about that.
Walking in here this morning, did you, David?
No.
Good.
but difficult circumstances because they had their way and he came in with his way.
Yeah.
And they obviously didn't like it. That's why I think, and I don't know whether they were, I'm sure they weren't, but maybe they were, that Ross and Joby should have been with him in the recruitment process just to gauge whether they were on the same page in terms of what the culture is, what we expect from you, what he wants to bring in. It feels like none of that was done. And yeah, I respect them for making the early call, but if I'm Carl Fletcher, I'm thinking cheers for that. That is absolutely killed me.
Yeah, and given all that we've just... We're just going to... Let's mention Barnsley in League Two as well, shall we? Seeing as they keep popping up in every other league. Do you stick someone in there as caretaker just while you do a thorough process, or do you the quick in and out and do you rush things and then are things too... But more importantly, on all of that, Joe, when does Kevin Nolan get a job?
Well, I think he's in the betting for all three of the available jobs in...
Is he? And which one's he highest up in?
Grimsby.
Yeah, I can see him at Grimsby.
He's second favourite for the Grimsby job. But the betting's... There's no clear favourite. Anthony Limbrick's the favourite, but he's 3-1. So he's not odds on or anything. He's not running away with Kevin Nolan 6-1.
Again, it comes down to what are the chairman, the owners willing to spend, to invest? What do they want from the team? Is it just to have something that's a bit stable and up and away you go? One other word on money. Maxfield Town's winding up position in the High Court has been adjourned for 2 weeks. That's Mike Miney, the man in the know from BBC Radio Manchester on Macclesfield. Max say that the debt's paid. HMRC say it's yet to clear. Someone just go and sort that club out. So difficult for everyone involved with it at the moment. Right, some football on the pitch. Scunthorpe, Port Vale. Form table looks favourably on both of these, Mr. Clark.
It does. I think this is a game between... The league table won't suggest this, but in reality, in terms of across the last eight games or so, these are two of the better teams in the division. On the Scunthorpe side, I think Lee Novak's return has been massive for them.
Yeah.
4-4-2, him and Van Veen up front. There's a lot of power there. They'll work hard. There's a bit... You know, Van Veen has got that a little bit of magic on occasion. He can be hit and miss, but when he's hot, he can be a good player. And I like the central midfield at the moment with Perch and Lund. Perch has come into the midfield and that's a pretty experienced engine room. So Scunthorpe are finding their way under Paul Hurst, and I expect them to be at least mid-table by the end of the season. Now, I don't think they're going to be involved in a relegation battle. So, yeah, this would be a good game against a Vale team that are decent.
Yeah, and they both actually just played, didn't they? Played Orient, Scunthorpe, but just sat Carl Fletcher. And then Port Vale, play Carlisle, just sack Stephen Presley. So I think they were the beneficiaries of that sort of uncertain times there. But it'll be a tight game. I think Port Vale might just nick it.
Yeah, I'm probably with you on that one. Port Vale up to eighth at the moment, just outside those playoffs. It's so tight again. Still.
Well, yeah, no one's. You don't think of Port Vale being a very glamorous team sometimes. They're making their way again, aren't they? They're definitely improving under John Askew, who can be quite dour in terms of the image he, you know, purveys, but he knows what he's doing. And because he got Macclesfield into the Football League, remember?
Who are the glamorous team in League Two?
Who are the glamorous team
in League Two? If Cardiff, aforementioned, Swindon. Aren't massive.
Swindon are the glamour boys.
Swindon
surely.
Are the glamour yeah. team.
I know Ginger Pele. They must be glamorous.
Yeah. Joe?
I just said Salford.
No, Joe's not the Ginger Pele.
Salford. Yeah, Joe. Joe could be the Ginger Pele. Yeah, you're right.
Port Vale, quietly. They've been very good. One defeat in the last 12 in all competitions. So not an easy game for Scunthorpe. Yeah, difficult game to predict this one.
Answers on a postcard. Who are the glamour side of the EFL? We'll extend it beyond League Two. Any team you'd like to
Did you see the video
that?
Of Forest Green?
Which
the,
one?
The one that was doing the rounds about that they had two young people showing us what a green club they were. Did you see it?
Go on.
It was just, you have to see it. For those listeners that haven't seen it, just get yourself on YouTube and watch it. It's TV gold.
Yeah, I'm not describing it. Scunthorpe, Port Vale, Joe Crilly, odds on?
Scunthorpe, just a shade above evens at 6-5 to win. Port Vale, 11-5 in the draw, 12-5.
Next, wobble on who, do we think? Who's going to be sacked next? This is my favourite one across the EFL. While you wander on that, David, so you're coming to me, you're coming with me.
Am I
to
coming
Fulham.
To yours?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm cooking. You've okay. got to bring nine other players.
I can find nine other friends.
Just so I can interview you all, yeah. one at a time, decide who comes in. Next week. Yeah, Adrian, brilliant. Where are you this weekend?
I'm going to the game that has
the
been
glamour
dubbed
tie.
El Sakiko, Arsenal against Southampton. So,
soon to be in the Championship both, right? Yeah. Joe?
Oh, I'm going to Spain.
Oh, you just remembered. Whilst you remember that, who's odds next for the sack? Anyone?
We've not got a market, but if you were to just ask me, I'd say Mark Sampson, surely.
Mark Sampson, I'm sure, will be
he
defending
himself. He must
always
be himself. At the top of the betting. Is he ever off it?
6th of December, he has to answer the latest allegations against him. Thank you, David. Thank you, Adrian. And thank you, Joe. This time next week, he'll be sporting some other bit of Bolton Wanderers tat. By tat, I mean, obviously, really highly priced merchandise that's of good quality. Not tat at all. I take that back, my lord. We'll be back with full complement of fixtures from this weekend, which is very exciting all round. As for me, it's to the cosy Craven Cottage on Friday I go. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then, stay safe, be kind, and rewind. Thank you, Abby.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.